Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. Satchmo rolling at you. Tuesday afternoon. One of the great weeks in Michigan State history. Michigan State basketball, number one in the nation. Michigan State football beats Nebraska for the first time in school history. What a week. And we've got a fun week ahead. Joining me to discuss this and more from Washington, D.C. is the Thin Man, DB. Greetings, DB.
DB, greetings, number one ranked Spartan Nation.
It is. It feels good, doesn't it?
Yes.
I was looking for the theme song before we got on here to the Jeffersons, but I couldn't find it, or I couldn't find a virus-free version, I should say, to upload and play. But we will get that song up in the archive eventually, because the Spartans indeed are moving on up. They're moving on up the poll rankings in football. They're moving on up the poll rankings in basketball. They're moving on up the bowl projections. It'll be interesting to see, DB, how Michigan State deals with prosperity. But let us start with football. We can stick with football and basketball this show. We will in later shows get to a little women's basketball. I will give a shout out to the men's soccer team at the end of this show because they deserve a little shout out and a little criticism of the Big Ten for the preposterous Big Ten soccer championship. Anyway. But let us begin with football, DB, where the Michigan State Spartans beat Nebraska 41-28. 41 points from the Michigan State offense, DB. Admit it, your jaw was on the ground at some point in this game.
Yeah, you know, the first thing that went through my mind after the game, because I was so caught up in the game, was, How are we not doing this stuff in September?
Well, in September, we didn't have a quarterback, and our quarterback is much more experienced than he is right now. We had receivers that weren't catching the ball. We had a running back that couldn't run behind an offensive line that couldn't block.
Okay, that's simple.
How's that for an explanation?
How did it all change?
Well, all right, so let's start off with this, because, let's wrap up the game first. DB, was this right. More a case of Michigan State winning or Nebraska losing?
That's a good question. I really believe I'm going to say the Spartans won this game, and here's why. The offense made the plays when they had to make it. The defense, were they great? No. Amir Abdullah was running around on the field on them, but the defense did make the plays when they had to. The offense had to squeeze out a little bit more. Thank goodness for Jeremy Langford at the end. And I want to give some props here to the special teams. Mr. Trick Play, Mike Sadler, and then Michael Geiger's foot, too, helping out. Yeah, this was a win. This was a Nebraska team that was creaky. The only good player I really saw on the field for Nebraska, really good player, was Amir Abdullah. The rest of them, this is a mediocre
Nebraska had a defensive end that I thought was very impressive. Well, did a good job getting pressure on Connor Cook. John Baptiste was the defensive back, who's also very good. I thought Nebraska has some talent on the defensive side of the ball. They had some talent on the defensive line. John Baptiste, I thought, was very good. Because this Nebraska defense gave the Michigan State offensive line more problems than they faced the entire Big Ten season, DB.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I thought it was a bit of a disappointing performance for the Michigan State defense. This is a team that prides itself on stopping the run. Yet Nebraska, as we've seen, every time Michigan State's played Nebraska, has no problem running the ball against Pat Narduzzi's defense. Bo Pelini and his offensive staff might not have figured out much in Nebraska, but they figured out how to run on Michigan State, and they seem to have that formula down. They've always been able to do it. Bo Pelini said going into the game, we've always been able to run on them. We feel like we're going to be able to run on them. And then in his post-game press conference, Bo Pelini said, we've always been able to run on these guys, and we thought we could, and we did. And so they feel pretty confident against Michigan State's run defense. The Michigan State defenders were not happy with their performance at all. They had a couple of busted assignments that led to big play from the big plays to Nebraska. You take away those busted assignments, they held the Nebraska offense pretty much in check, but you can't take them away. Those busted assignments did hurt. And when you bust an assignment, other teams are going to go pick up large chunks of yardage on this defense because this defense is predicated on people being at the right place at the right time. High risk, high reward. But if you're at the right place at the right time, you're going to get results. And if you're not, you're going to get gashed going the other direction.
I think one of the big keys in the game, and if you take it away, probably it's closer, maybe Nebraska wins, is these 5 turnovers that Nebraska had. They were gifts to the Spartans. And I said before that game, the Spartans could build up like a 10-0 lead and get a little cushion. That could be the difference in the game. And it was really the difference in the game when you look to the end, because Nebraska didn't run out of time, basically. The Spartans managed the clock very well down to the end. But those 5 turnovers, you take them away, it's probably a closer game.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is why I asked whether Nebraska won it or did Michigan State win or did Nebraska lose. It was because of those 5 turnovers. And as you noted, a few of them were just gifts. Just inexplicable fumbles inside the 10-yard line and that sort of thing. But, hey, a good team converts on them. Michigan State did convert on them. Michigan State also converted on big third down plays, big fourth down plays. You want to know what job I really want, DB? I want the job of naming Mark D'Antonio's trick plays.
What was this one called in this game? I never heard.
Charlie Brown.
Oh, yeah, I can see it. Because the kicker whiffed on the kick.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
whiffed
awesome.
On the kick. Well, Holder pulls the ball out, goes running for a few yards. And by the way, give Sadler credit because that fake was designed to go to the outside. There wasn't any room on the outside for him to run for a first down. So he just plunged right up the middle, the only place he could go.
Dude, and I'll tell you what, he got popped really good when he went into that. I got worried, actually, after that. I was excited, but I thought, oh, no, like, you know, we don't want to lose our punter to some crazy thing like that. I mean, certainly there was that was a wonderful moment in the game, and it was key. But, yeah, Sadler has a lot of guts to do that, but it was tremendous. And you know what I see when I see that? The Michigan State football team, from the coaching staff on through, Mark D'Antonio makes that environment fun there for the players. I mean, you know, they're serious about winning, but, you know, he looks like they have fun out there sometimes, even in practice. I'm sure the players had a ball practicing that play.
Oh, yeah, and Max Bull is on the field goal team. He says he wants to fake to go to him one of these days. He's waiting for that. That's his big dream, and I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. I that's just fantastic. And so you're right. The players do have some fun. This was a fun game to watch. It was an entertaining football game, DB.
It was. It was really an exciting game. If you were just an average fan not rooting for either of these teams, I mean, take away the sloppiness of Nebraska. It was a very exciting game. I mean, you know, like it or not, people like to put up points. Or people like to watch points put up, I should say. I don't think people want to watch a defensive, you know, 6-3 game, Michigan Northwestern. I appreciate good defense. I don't mind that. But I think the average person just sitting down on their couch wants to see some points put up there. You know what I'm saying?
If
you wanted boredom, you could have flipped over to Michigan and Northwestern.
Now, we did have the one-per-game Connor Cook almost disaster, DB, where he threw the ball right to a Nebraska player who could not hold on for the interception. It was ruled an interception on the field, and they had to go to replay to overturn it. And one of these days, DB, they're going to hold on to the ball.
Yeah, Connor Cook was very fortunate, and you just brought up a good point there. That, despite all the Nebraska errors, could have been a huge turning point in the game. If Nebraska had the ball there, they really could have seized the momentum of the game. And the Spartans, they never have gotten back into it. But fortunately, that drive continued, and that was a key turn. You know, there was a right call, as video showed, but it was crucial in the game.
Yeah, but doesn't it freak you out? I mean, it does me. You're just holding. You're just holding your breath, waiting for the one Connor Cook throw right to the other team that you know is coming, like clockwork.
Yeah.
You have no idea whether the other team is going to catch it, but you know the throw is coming.
Yeah.
That said, Cook deserves a lot of credit. He was able with his feet to keep plays alive, to shuffle within the pocket, to scramble a little bit, and then find open receivers down the field. Remarkable. Here's the other remarkable thing, DB. The receivers stepping up. Mumphrey, Fowler, McGarrett Kings, stepping up, getting open, making tough catches. This receiving core has really matured. The only receiver that is still a bit of a mystery out there right now is Aaron Burbridge.
Yeah.
But everyone else has really matured, and it's remarkable. I mean, McGarrett Kings has turned.
I can't say enough about Cook. I mean, I was just gonna say I can't say enough about Cook. I mean, he's really improved, and I think. Going beyond the season, if I could for a second, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen here, but it's going to be hard going into next year to just say, all right, well, Cook, you're not playing anymore, and we're going to let somebody else try. This kid has really proved himself.
Yeah, people aren't chanting for Damon Terry anymore, are they?
No, I don't hear that. I'm not, and I was guilty of it.
Yeah, the quarterback battle next year is going to be interesting because Damien Terry is an undeniable talent. And the question becomes, who has a higher ceiling, Connor Cook or Terry? And are you willing to put up with the growing pains of Terry next year to reach that higher ceiling if indeed you determine he has the higher ceiling? This is going to be a very interesting quarterback competition, and I don't think it's going to be settled in spring ball. I think it's going to go right through fall ball. And Connor Cook, to a certain degree. Oh, you hope not. But even if you have a repeat, you figure that at the very least, Connor Cook is much more prepared for this year after this year's experience than he was last year. So you have that issue as well. This game against Nebraska was sort of, I mean, you've got to give Jeremy Langford credit, DB. Turned in a heck of a job running the ball. This reminds me of a very Larry Caper-ish performance. If you remember, Larry Caper had that strong freshman year, strong first season running back, came out of nowhere and was eventually replaced by, by Le'Veon Bell. And I wonder if Jeremy Langford is going through the same thing. He's doing running behind possibly the best offensive line in the D'Antonio era, doing a good job, picking up good chunks of yardage. I think he's had 5 consecutive 100-yard rushing games. Might be the first MSU running back since Blake Ezor. Is that right? I think that sounds right.
I think that's correct.
To do that. And so, he's had a remarkable season. Yet he's got there are highly thought of running backs who are knocking on his door, pounding after him, who might take his job next year. This is an interesting situation. But on the other hand, if Langford keeps improving and keeps running the way he's running, he's a good running back. And we'll see what happens. But for now, Langford is picking up key yardage. He's making tough touchdown runs. And around the goal line, DB, he has a nose for the end zone. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, Langford is starting to remind me of, like, one of those backs from Alabama with how strong he is. You know, Alabama has those, like, Eddie Lacy and some of these guys, T.J. Yeldon. I mean, these guys are very strong. And that's what I noticed about Langford even more than ever before on Saturday. He was dragging Nebraska defenders with him on some of these runs near the end of the game. They were so winded.
Yeah, they were winded. And it is a testament to how the Michigan State team is playing offense. It's a ball control offense. They stay on the field a long time. And part of why you see Michigan State having so much success in the second half is because they're possessing the ball for large chunks of time, and they're running it at them. And defenses are just wearing down. The defensive lines are wearing down. The secondaries are wearing down. Michigan State's defense is so good that they keep giving Michigan State possessions. And that line just keeps beating on you and beating on you. The offense keeps beating on you and beating on you. And finally, defenses just cave in. And so that's why I think you see Michigan State towards the end of games really putting teams away, is because they've been battering them and just battering them and battering them. And eventually those defenses break. And they might not break in the first quarter, and they might not break in the second quarter. They might not break even in the third quarter. But somewhere in that fourth quarter, they just run out of gas. And as long as the defense can keep Michigan State in or ahead until that fourth quarter, Michigan State's got a good chance to win.
Yep.
The other interesting thing is, like I said, these receivers, wow, they're getting open now. They're getting separation. They're catching the ball, and even when they don't get separation, they're making the tough catches in traffic. And they're doing the little things that if they catch something short of the sticks, they're getting to the first down. They're getting to the first down marker. And R.J. Shelton on these jet sweeps is fun to watch. He's got speed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He sure
lines up at that what? It lines up at that wide receiver position, comes racing around on the jet sweep, and picks it up, and it's really remarkable. And then the other nice thing that's sort of evolved in this Michigan State offense is the ability to get the ball to the fullback and to the tight end, and just catch people by surprise. And Trevor Pendleton has turned into a nice addition. Catching the ball out of the backfield. He's got 6 catches for 106 yards, DB. Think about that, a fullback. Josiah Price, the tight end, 9 catches for 130 yards. And if you look at the evolution of this offense, they didn't really get integrated into the offense until later in the season.
You're
so
right,
it's added a little bit of diversity, and it's forcing teams. Jamal Lyles, 4 catches, 53 yards. It's even Andrew Gleicher's catching the ball every now and then. Three passes, 30 yards. It's forcing teams to defend everyone and not just load up on the box. And when you go into a pass route now, well, it's not just Benny Fowler and Tony Lippett you have to worry about. You actually have to worry about the back out of the backfield, and you have to worry about the tight end threatening underneath. And that extra space – and it's not a lot of extra space, but that just little bit of extra spacing that it creates for the offense has made all the difference in the world.
Yeah, it's like night and day, not only from earlier in the season, but definitely from last season where that wasn't there at all.
Yeah, no, there was no spacing to the offense last year. And there's spacing to the offense this year. One of the after effects or one of the interesting developments this season that's come out of this is Riley Bullitt, DB. We went into this season thinking starting running back, and then he got shifted back. Then he got shifted to fullback. Now he's back practicing, getting defensive reps as a linebacker.
Mm.
There isn't room for him on the offensive side of the ball anymore.
That's interesting. That's not what anyone would have thought after the first game.
No, not at all. Right. That's not what anyone would have thought after spring practice.
Yeah, right. But it's a good problem to have, that's for sure.
It is a good problem to have. All right. Other things. Did Michigan State just get Bo Pelini fired?
You know, that's a tough one because Nebraska, I'll tell you what, the Bo Pelini haters would have been furious on Sunday had Nebraska won because Nebraska, I mean, like I said, the winner of that game Saturday, and that was the important one for Michigan State to win. Certainly they want to win these last two, there's no doubt, because they don't want to spoil any shot at a BCS. But that game on Saturday, that's a tough thing to say. I mean, Pelini sounds like he's made amends with the Nebraska fans. I think they're going to be watching very carefully, and I say they, the Nebraska administration, they're going to be watching very carefully how Nebraska finishes the season now. If they get blown out at Penn State or some other thing happens, I think this could be the beginning of the end for Pelini with some of the things that have gone on. I kind of am getting the feeling that you might be onto something there, that he could be fired. But, you know, if they win all the way through and then win a bowl game, do you fire the guy for that?
I sense there's a fair amount of talent on the defensive side. And I got to admit, the way he coaches that offensive line is impressive. I mean, they're dealing with injuries on that offensive line, DB, and they played extremely well.
Yeah.
Well, let me rephrase that. They didn't play extremely well. They blocked in the running game extremely well.
Yeah.
They did not block in. They did not block in the passing game very well. There were Michigan State linebackers and defensive linemen in the backfield the entire game when Michigan State was trying to pass the ball. But I thought from a run blocking unit, I thought they did fairly well. So run blocking, I thought they did well. Pass blocking, I thought was less than average. If you talk to Nebraska fans, they were wondering why the offensive line didn't show up at all. This offensive line is not up to Husker standards, but they are dealing with a lot of injuries. And it looks like that defense is improving. I think Pelini's a good coach. I think it's tough to say. Part of it just has to deal with outsized expectations. Nebraska expects their team to be competing for national championships, and they haven't won a conference championship since they joined the Big Ten. In addition to that, I think there was a general belief, although it no longer exists, but there was a general belief that when they joined the conference, they would automatically start winning Big Ten championships because of the Big Ten's reputation nationally. And then they realized, wait a minute, there are some teams and talent here outside of the Michigans and Ohio States of the world. And that's changed. And, in fact, if you take a look at the Big Ten, since they expanded and they went to the legends and leaders divisions, what was the whole point of doing this, DB? There were two points. The two points were to get Ohio State and Michigan to play for the Big Ten championship and then to split up the Big Ten, quote-unquote, brand names, put Ohio State and Penn State and Nebraska on one side and Wisconsin and Michigan Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Nebraska on one side, or Penn State on one side, and then Michigan and Michigan on the other
Nebraska
side, and get Michigan and Nebraska on there. So, put Wisconsin and Penn State on one side, Michigan and Nebraska on the other side. Those are your four quote-unquote brand names, and have them playing for the championship every year. That's not how it worked out.
No, not in the history of the this. In fact, Drew Sharp named the Spartans right now even the unofficial best team in the Leaders Legends era for all 3 years.
And why not?
And why not? Although you could make the case that Wisconsin could be, because they pretty much won the first two and only two of this era of and barring the unthinkable here in the last 2 weeks, Wisconsin will not be back, but certainly won the first two conference championships.
And you can make the argument for Ohio State as well, even though they were not bowl eligible or postseason eligible last year.
You want to get into the what's coming up and the rankings here? I got some stuff to say about these rankings.
All right, well, want to talk about Northwestern first?
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit, and then we got about 15 minutes left, I suppose, after that.
All right. Northwestern. Michigan State. Northwestern gives Michigan State fits. This is a pretty good Northwestern team, DB. It gives Northwestern traditionally gives Michigan State fits. They've lost a lot of painfully close games at the wire. Hail Mary to Nebraska. All credit to Michigan. And we don't give Michigan much credit, but all credit to Michigan on this show. But all credit to Michigan for hustling that field goal unit out onto the field with 9 seconds left in the game, getting it off and converting. That was remarkable. They deserve all the credit in the world for that. Most teams wouldn't have been able to do that. They got the field goal. They tied the game. And then they won it in triple overtime. Northwestern needs to win the last two games to get bowl eligible, DB. How worried are you about this game and Michigan State's ability to handle prosperity?
I'm not as worried about it as I would be if the Spartans had lost to Nebraska. I feel like I don't want the Spartans to go into the, and I don't think they're going to, but I don't want the Spartans to go into this game thinking, we can lose a game, that's all right. There's a lot of potential for that. And certainly Northwestern's going to play really hard because they haven't won a conference game, and their backs are really, really against the wall. But at the same time, I just don't think Northwestern – sure they could win the game, but I don't think this time. I think the Spartans realize what's in front of them, and they've got to go out here and take care of business in these last two games. They've just got to win these two, because if you stumble, you can still win your division. But what happens then is you're going to get pushed down in those dang rankings, and you're not going to, then you're going to have to win the Big Ten Conference Championship. If you win these last two, and then lose a close one to Ohio State in the conference championship, you have a shot at something like the Orange Bowl.
Now DB, you've got high hopes for the Spartan football team here.
I do.
You're thinking. So right now, and I'm just reading in between the lines, but I will allow you to elaborate right now. You're not happy with the pollster. You're not happy with the ranking, and you want the Spartans in a BCS bowl game. That's what you're expecting. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, so what I'm getting at here is, and I think the Spartans will take this game very seriously, and Minnesota the following week, because I think they know beyond the big picture what's on the line here. And what I think is, if they win these two games against Northwestern and Minnesota, and let's say they lose 24-23 to Ohio State. Now, some other things have to happen. The first thing that has to happen is Ohio State needs to keep winning right up until the Big Ten championship. The second thing is, it sure wouldn't be so bad if Alabama got upset by Auburn. I don't know if that's going to happen, but if those top teams keep winning up at the top, even if it is Alabama, and everything kind of stays the same, some of these teams in front of the Spartans, like Oklahoma State and Stanford. May I just rant for a second?
Please
Stanford.
Rant.
Stanford, my God. There is no way that Stanford should be still ranked in the top 10 of the BCS after losing to an unranked and not very good USC team last week. Are you telling me the Pac-12 is better than the Big Ten? That Stanford should still be sitting in the top 10? That is a joke.
I can make the argument that the Pac-12 is better than the Big Ten this year.
Okay, maybe so. But should Stanford still be ranked in the top 10 of the BCS after that loss to USC?
That's their second loss in the year, right?
It's their second loss of the year, and not a top 25 ranked USC team at all.
Who'd they lose to earlier in the year?
Oregon.
No, they beat Oregon.
Not Oregon. No, I'm sorry. I'd have to go back and look, but that was their second loss. So they lose one to Arizona. I'm going to look it up while we're talking.
Yeah.
I don't believe Stanford should be there.
Here's the ultimate problem we're running into. The Big Ten has been so devalued in the eyes of football watchers that it's hard for pollsters to take any more than one team in the Big Ten into the top 10. It really is. Never mind the fact that Michigan State, when it had its crack against Georgia, they beat Georgia. You want to know what everyone remembers? Everyone remembers Michigan State being pummeled by Alabama. Fair or unfair? I'd say it's unfair. But then you have the fact that, and it's one of those weird things. You want to know what's happened with the Big Ten since the Pac-12 since USC went downhill? Everyone's been like, yeah, the Pac-12's no good because USC isn't at the top. Well, the Pac-12's just been fine. You can right. deal with. Go ahead, DB.
Stanford lost to Utah. Now, here's what might be holding them up, and maybe I'm being too harsh. They did beat UCLA when they were ranked number 9, and they did beat Oregon the week before when they were ranked number 3. So, okay, maybe that's still propping them up. But USC, is not even too much.
USC's been really good since they switched coaches, DB.
They have, but they're not ranked.
Well, maybe the problem is the USC isn't ranked. Maybe that's the problem, not the fact that Stanford lost to them.
Well, here's rooting for Stanford to just blow it completely here against Cal and Notre Dame in the last two games, because the Spartans need all the the Spartans need all the help they can get and get these teams out in front of them. And by the way, and I'm willing to even go this far, go Minnesota this week, beat the crap out of Wisconsin. The Badgers need another loss hung on them. It's at Minnesota Stadium, the perfect opportunity for the Gophers. I would love to see that because it gets Wisconsin out of the way.
All right, so there are a couple of thoughts for me here. And, DB, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I cannot root. I absolutely positively cannot root for Notre Dame to beat Stanford.
I can't if it helps the Spartans.
But I can't do it. I mean, it's one thing to root for Michigan to beat Nebraska, and that's fine because Michigan State controls its own destiny at this point. Michigan State beat Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Michigan State wins out. Whatever happens, happens. That's all well and good. I cannot, in good conscience, vote for Notre Dame to beat Stanford. That's just a step too far. So that's the first thing.
Okay.
The second thing
we
is
we have a difference of opinion on that. I'm selfish. I'll take it. I'll sleep with the devil.
Second of all, Wisconsin, go ahead and beat Minnesota this week. Crush them. Beat the living daylights out of them. Extinguish all hope from their season prior to them arriving in East Lansing.
You are so evil.
Stomp on their soul.
Yeah, but that's hey. Listen to me. If the Badgers lose this game, they're out of the BCS discussion.
It doesn't matter to me. Absolutely irrelevant. If Michigan State takes care of business, all right, everything else will sort itself out.
Well, of course. That's the main thing. Obviously, we're talking theoreticals. We're assuming a loss somewhere. Bottom line here is if the Spartans win these last two games and then go to the Big Ten Championship and win the game, there's no doubt that they're going to go to the
There's no doubt. But I just stomp on Minnesota. Destroy whatever good energy that exists in that stadium.
That's what Minnesota bias is coming through. A little bit. I think he's more than just not wanting to set up a big game with the Gophers and give them a chance. Because it would be, you know, if Minnesota wins that game and the Spartans lose the Northwestern, you raise a point that the Gophers then have a shot at the at the division, which is crazy, but it could happen.
Which is exactly what I don't want to happen.
Yeah, and then so realistically, you're right in that sense.
So exactly what I don't want to happen. All right, so let's throw that out. This BCS stuff, would I love to go to a BCS bowl game? Yes. The game I want to go to is the Rose Bowl.
Well, of course.
All right. After that, would a BCS at-large bid be nice? Sure, it would be great for the program. I am not going to get hung up on it. It would be fantastic for the program. But we would have lost two games if we're not going to the Rose Bowl. We would have lost to Ohio State. We would have lost to Notre Dame. And we wouldn't have beaten two of the best teams on our schedule. And do you deserve a BCS bowl game after you don't beat two of the best teams on your schedule? Probably not. So,
well,
I, w- Would I love for us to go to a BCS bowl game? Yeah, I would. I would love to go to a BCS bowl game. Going to the Orange Bowl would be fun. Going to the Rose Bowl would be even better.
And that's
what I'm really looking forward to. Anything other than the Rose Bowl is a consolation bowl, which I will happily go to and enjoy and have a good time. But I'm not going to get hung up on Michigan State not getting a BCS bowl bid if they lose to Ohio State.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm just being a fan here. I'm just being a couch potato throwing around the particulars. I want Michigan State to have their chance, even if they come up short. Because let's face it, Spartans going against Ohio State is no guarantee. I mean, that's a good Buckeyes team, one of the best offenses they're going to face all year. And it is not going to be easy to beat them. I think the Spartans defense is up to the challenge. Is the Spartan offense up to the challenge? Well, we've been wondering all year. I guess my attitude remains just as it was before the Nebraska game. If this team wants to be one of the big dogs, they got to go out there and prove it and earn it. And I think that they're ready for and up to the challenge, so let's just see what happens.
Yeah, see what happens. And actually, this Nebraska game and the fact that Michigan State defense did not play its best game against Nebraska is going to help Michigan State if and when it plays Ohio State, because Ohio State runs a similar offense to Nebraska, except with a lot more talent. Yeah.
Right.
And so Michigan State will at least have gone through this offense once, and that's a big help. DB, are you thinking Rose Bowl for this Spartan team?
I don't see why not. I mean, I think there's every shot in the world. I think it's 50-50 if they end up playing Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship. I mean, I think they have a very real shot at it. But I could also see the Spartans, you know, falling short, and then the rankings fall where they may. And I know that there are a lot of Spartan people on that Orange Bowl committee that will push really hard to get a Clemson-Michigan State matchup. Can you imagine that for a second? The defense going against Taj Boyd in the Orange Bowl? Could you imagine that for a minute?
That would be outstanding.
That's what I'm thinking. Is the consolation prize, and that's not a shabby consolation prize that happens. But we could also end up in Orlando against Eshmo, and that's not terrible. They could be pitting us against, you know, Jadeveon Clowney in South Carolina, which would be something also, too. I mean, that's not out of the question either. So I think no matter what, where we fall here, we're going to end up in some kind of interesting game.
Yes, well, the scenery in South Beach is quite remarkable that time of year. let's wrap up the football talk there.
All right.
Hope for North Michigan State should win the game. Would it shock us if Northwestern won? No, I don't think it would shock either one of us if Northwestern won. All right, let's switch gears to basketball and DB. Michigan State basketball. You've got to be simultaneously excited and worried beyond belief about this team. So let's deal with the excitement first. They came out of the gate, DB. You know, they had the one warm-up game against McNeese State. And they went out and they beat the University of Kentucky, the number one, then number one ranked Wildcats, 78-74 in a heck of a basketball game in Chicago. I mean, Michigan State's fast break was on display. They were forcing Kentucky turnovers. Then Kentucky, behind a fantastic freshman, came roaring back and tied the game in the second half, and Michigan State put them away. That game was a lot of fun to watch. It was remarkable. And the crowd was into it, and everyone was fired up. Really good basketball game. And then, DB, 62-53 over Columbia, and Columbia was in the entire way. And then they beat Portland 82-67, and the game was tied at 46. What happened?
Well, I think it goes to something you saw in the Kentucky game, Satchmo, and this is just I'm just guessing here, but I think that some of these teams, and you know, I didn't look closely at the roster of Portland. By the way, just digressing, was this Portland, Oregon, or Portland, Maine?
Oregon.
Oh, okay, that's what I thought, but then I wasn't sure as the game went on. Shame on me.
No,
I didn't look that up.
Yeah, they are the Portland Pilots out of the West Coast Conference.
Okay, all right. But I think that these teams, and a couple of intangibles here, some experience. Obviously, Columbia had a lot of that, so that's just one intangible. The other thing is everyone's given the Spartans a big effort. I mean, that always happens anyways with the football team, but everyone's really given it a strong effort. So every single night, the Spartans are facing somebody, whether it's McNeese State or Indiana, they're getting the best effort. But the big thing that I think is happening, and this goes to what you said last week, is that lack of size besides pain in the paint is creeping up to get Michigan State, and teams are starting to exploit that.
Yeah, ultimately that's what's going on here. If you take a look at that, Michigan State was +5 in rebounding against Portland. Columbia out rebounded Michigan State, as did Kentucky. That's not Michigan State basketball right there.
No,
not at all. Yet Michigan State is struggling on the boards. Payne is the only big man that's rebounding effectively. Dawson is being relied on from the small forward position to grab a lot of rebounds. And I think he had 10 rebounds the other night or something like that. I'll check the box here. But Denzel Valentine is being relied on to rebound. The guards are being relied upon to rebound because Michigan State as a team is not rebounding well. And they're getting, which is interesting because the key play in the Kentucky-Michigan State game was Dawson getting a tip-in on the offensive boards. But as a team, no, look at the box score from yesterday. Alex Gauna, who doesn't seem strong enough to play defense or rebound. You saw it in the Kentucky game. He's got offensive skills, but he doesn't seem strong enough to do this. He had one defensive rebound, one rebound. Adrian Payne had 7 rebounds. Keith Appling had a rebound. Gary Harris had 4 rebounds. Denzel Valentine had 4 rebounds. Gavin Schilling, the freshman who was expected to come in and bang bodies and do a good job, no rebounds. Kenny Kaminsky, he only played 2 minutes, no rebounds. Matt Costello, 5 rebounds in 10 minutes. Brandon Dawson had the 10 rebounds I was talking about. This is a team that's struggling to rebound the ball.
This feels like deja vu. Didn't we have this problem last year a little bit even with Derek Nix?
Not really. Derek Nix hoovered them up. I mean, you had Nix down there. And that's the thing is Michigan State's still trying to figure out who's going to replace Derek Nix, both defensively and on the boards. Rebounding at a high rate is something new for Adrian Payne because he's always had a partner in crime to help him out in the rebounding. But this isn't good. I mean, this is a team that Portland had 10 offensive rebounds, DB.
It's the defensive rebounds for the Spartans that are most concerning. I'm not as concerned if they're not getting offensive rebounds. I mean, certainly they need to, but I think what you're saying that I agree with wholly, although I'm not as worried about it yet as you are, because I think Tom Izzo will figure that out. But I think as the Spartans, struggle with that early on, that's a key right there. They've got to start getting the rebounds.
Yeah, they do have to start getting the rebounds. Denzel Valentine is getting logging major minutes early once again because this is the team that is frequently going small, and when they go small, it makes sense to get Valentine in there because he's a bigger body playing the guard position, and so they need his minutes. He shot 1 for 5 yesterday. They need his shot to keep falling, but he's a very good faster making position. But here's the other reason why they need to grab those defensive boards, DB. This is a Michigan State team that loves to run. You want to know what you can't do if you don't grab the rebound? You can't run the break.
Yeah.
You can't run. Absolutely. And the other problem is Michigan State on half-court offense last year, when their offense bogged down, what did they do? They threw the ball into Derek Nix. Derek Nix would get a bucket in the post, or he'd kick it back out for an open three, or you'd get cutters, and there was offensive flow and continuity. Right now, the Michigan State half-court offense doesn't have any flow and continuity because it doesn't quite have an identity yet. And they're working on that, and they'll figure it out. And will they get it eventually? Yeah, they'll get it eventually. But right now, they don't have it because their identity is no longer playing for the team.
I think you hit it there, Satchmo. I think, unfortunately, at the sacrifice of the defensive rebound in particular, I think what you're going to end up seeing is maybe they go to a three-big lineup. Maybe Gavin Schilling is going to start getting more minutes because he's a big guy. He's very in it raw, but he's going to start getting more minutes. And you could see where you have just a two-guard set out there, and you're not going to be able to run sometimes.
Yeah, I doubt that. Dawson's just so explosive, and he's doing a good job on the boards that I don't think they're quite ready to go that route this time. What they need is either Costello or Ghana or Schilling, one of those guys to step up and become a beast on the boards.
Yeah.
And they were hoping Costello was going to be that person, but he only had five rebounds, and you need more out of your big fella. You just do.
Yeah, Costello has to play bigger, and I think Ghana, you know, he's deficient offensively, but he can still be a beast on the boards. There's no reason why he can't be that kind of a guy. He's a big body down there.
Yeah, I don't think he's strong enough. You saw him get pushed around by Kentucky. I just don't think he's strong enough to do it. All right, I need to make two quick points about the crowds at the Breslin Center, DB, before we wrap this show.
Yeah, a lot is being made of this, but go ahead.
All right. So, well, there's one good thing and one bad thing. So I'll do the good thing first. So against Columbia, DB, the crowd was fantastic, especially on the shot clock. So in the first half of the shot clock, when the shot clock was down to 11 or 12 seconds, they would chant 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and trying to get Columbia to rush the shot clock. Now, the Izzone's been doing this for years, and I always get a kick out of it. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But here's the best part.
Because you think the teams would be prepared for that when they go in there. They know what some of these fans do sometimes. That's interesting to me.
It's interesting. But here's the best part. In the second half, at the end of the game, the Izzone reversed what it was doing with the shot clock, and it actually worked. So instead of going 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 with 11 or 12 seconds left on the shot clock, with 5 or 6 seconds left on the shot clock, they started their countdown from 10. And they'd be like, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. And when it got to 6, the buzzer would go off. And the players from Columbia were shocked because they'd figured out what the crowd was doing in the first half, and they had no idea the crowd had switched it up on them. And on back-to-back possessions, there were 24-second shot clock violations because of the crowd. It was awesome.
Isn't Columbia, aren't they an Ivy? Are they an Ivy school?
Columbia's an Ivy League school.
They should be smarter than that. That's ridiculously bad.
It was so awesome. In fact, Izzo wanted to, like, thank the crowd to get on the microphone and do something. He didn't want to embarrass Columbia, so he didn't do it. But he was definitely aware of what was going on and thought it was hilarious and thought it was awesome. And those back-to-back possessions on the shot clock violation, that actually turned the game in favor of Michigan State. So the Izzo and the crowd gets a direct assist in the win over Columbia. Outstanding.
That was great. I've seen the Izzone do that a lot, but that's really getting clever with the clock. I think we're in store for more hijinks with the clock during the season, Satchmo.
Oh, I'm looking forward to clock hijinks. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, the bad part about the crowd. The Portland game, DB. Where were the fans? I mean, Joe Rexroth said this was the smallest crowd he's ever seen. Jeff Seidel wrote a column about what's going on. Michigan State, number one in the country, and they can't turn out a full house?
the announced attendance is always who paid. I don't know how they keep track of that in college basketball. What was the I'm trying to look it up here real quick.
Well, the announced attendance was a sellout. They announced a sellout.
Okay.
Because all the tickets have been purchased.
All right, so here's a couple things going on. First of all, I can't totally speak to this because when the Big Ten Network shows the games, you only see the lower bowl sometimes. I saw portions of the upper level behind the baskets that looked like empty sections, but I couldn't tell if it was the entire
upper level. Well, there were sections. A lot of the upper level is empty. Some lower level sections are empty too.
Well, it looked like when I tuned in the second half, the lower level had pockets of empty seats, but not whole sections.
There shouldn't even be pockets of empty seats.
Well, wait a minute now. Time out. Okay, hold on. I think way too much is being made of this. Okay, first of all, I understand the team was just ranked number one, yes, and there should be a lot of excitement. A couple of external things here. First of all, those storms came plowing through there. If you just had your house knocked down or whatever, I'm sorry. Going to see a basketball game or whatever is not high on your priority list of things to do. I'm not saying that happened to everybody, but those storms packed a good punch in part of the state in the Midwest on Sunday. That's one thing. Now, I'm not saying that was a whole cause. The other thing here, too, is, look, it's a Monday night. It's Portland. I mean, come on. I mean,
it's inexcusable, DB. It is inexcusable. If you want to say a couple hundred seats were empty because of the storm, that's fine. All right, but saying that it's okay not to go to a game because it's Portland on a Monday night is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. Right, your team is number one in the country for the first time. You're talking about wanting to be treated seriously as a legitimate basketball power. You're wondering why recruits are going to other schools? Because you want to know what? At Kentucky and at Duke, there wouldn't have been any empty seats.
Well, that's true. I won't argue with that.
All right? At Kentucky and Duke, there wouldn't have been any empty seats. You don't hear them saying, oh, it's Portland on a Monday night. It's okay to skip the game. Uh-uh. You go to those stadiums, the arenas are full and full of electricity. And you want to know what? It had an effect on the team yesterday. Because the team's like, we're not playing. We're number one, and no one's turned out to see us. What's going on? No, I'm not buying the Portland on a Monday night argument.
But this is what I was saying last year. And as part of the athletic department, I have to think about this a little bit. I firmly believe, don't get rid of this Jennison idea. Don't make it a one-time thing. When you're playing some of those teams like that, I'd make some of them, not all of them, and I agree with what you're saying about the crowd, that people should show up. And I want to get into the StubHub factor here in a second, too. But I think that, maybe once in a while I have some of these games over at Jennison. Some of these Monday night at Jennison. I bet the building would be full.
Well, but it's not about the building being full. It's about the fans. Look, Michigan State fans are great about complaining. All right? They really are. I mean, if they don't like what's going on with the basketball program, they will vociferously, complain. But they need to start show up, too. If you're going to complain about what the basketball team's doing, show up.
Well, those seats in the upper deck, I just have to ask a question now. Those seats in the upper deck, are they just alumni fans, or are they students, or can they put more students up there, or who's?
That's where I sat when I was a student. I was
in
the upper deck as a student.
When you were a freshman and sophomore, you sat up there.
Yeah.
Because the Izzo predominantly gets down there in the lower level, but I mean, if you're not part of the Izzo.
Yeah, the Izzo gets down in the lower. If you're not part of the Izzo, that's where you're sitting. I was sitting up there.
Well, why don't they open more of those sections, too? Because I'm not blaming MSU's athletic administration a little bit for it. It seems like they're selling too many of those seats to people that don't show up. Why don't they sell more to the students?
Well, I think students are part of the problem.
So you think a lot of these tickets up there were students that didn't show up?
I think it's a mixture. I think it's a mixture of students and alumni who didn't show up because it was a Monday night game against Portland.
Now, I have to ask another question because this happens a lot with a lot of the arenas. I mean, and Michigan State's not, the only one here. I've seen this happen with other places, not your Duke or Kentucky, but I've seen this happen at the University of Michigan in some of these non-conference games and not Indiana, but some of these. And what I'm asking here is, the StubHub play a factor? Are people buying these seats in StubHub trying to sell them and then they can't?
Well, of course they can. Of course they are. That's what a lot of them are doing. A lot of them are buying tickets at the profit center. Instead of with StubHub, what you're getting now, you're getting a lot of people buying tickets because they want to make money off of it rather than wanting to actually go to the games. See, I bought tickets because I wanted to go to the game. I skipped class to go to the games.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to give the fans a pass on the first one. If it keeps happening a lot, you know, our fans should be better. I agree with what you're saying about fans showing up and sending a message to recruits and everything like that.
That's the thing. Look, you look at the schools that Michigan State is recruiting against for these top-level athletes and these top-level players, Indiana, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas. What do they all have in common? Their fans show up.
Yeah.
All right, Michigan State can't take a jump into that level and proudly proclaim itself being on the same level until the fans make the same leap that the coaches and the players do.
But here's the thing. This didn't always happen. I mean, this is a newer phenomenon. I mean, I don't remember. I mean, if you look back, you know, in the last 12 years, let's just say, 13 years, you know, since the Spartans won the national championship, I don't remember this being a huge, huge problem. I know it came up once in a while around the holidays, which is a little bit of a weird thing because the students are gone. So you can almost throw that out.
I am willing to give a pass when the students are gone. I'm willing to give a pass. Look, I'm not going to complain about any attendance when the students are gone. Non-issue.
Yeah, because even the Dukes and the Kentuckys, when the students are gone, they you know, there's it's not as empty as Breslin last night, but there's some pockets of empty seats and the students are gone.
Pockets are empty.
Playing Elon, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all well and good. What I'm saying is when the students are in and you get all those empty seats, and especially, all right, we're not talking about being ranked 20th in the country and all that sort. Number one in the country. Where's the party? It's just disappointing.
It's disappointing, but I think it's more of a problem if it continues through. I mean, I'm not saying it's totally excusable, but I think it's more of a problem if this keeps continuing. If they're playing North Carolina in a couple weeks in the Breslin, and it's like that, that's really, really bad.
But it's not going to be like that because they're playing North Carolina.
Then the question becomes,
all right.
Are there too many games in the college basketball season?
No, it's not about cream puff teams. You don't get a pass because there's a cream puff team. If you're a top basketball program, DB, and you have aspirations to being a top basketball program, you show up to play.
And then my next question is, maybe we don't want to be a top college basketball program to the fans. Maybe they're more interested in football.
Maybe, and maybe that's it. But, I mean, right now, you take a look at the game. I mean, November 29th. All right, that's a bad one because students are going to be on break.
Thanksgiving.
But December 17th, I don't know who UNF is, the North Florida Ospreys. I want to know what the crowd is going to be like for the North Florida Ospreys.
Students are still there at that time, I believe.
Yeah, I believe they are on the 17th.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll reopen this discussion again when we get to one of these games again and see. I'm kind of on the fence. I personally believe that the Detroit media is making too much out of this. I want to see a different game. Because I think those fans, Satchmel, those fans had a huge – I'm not talking about the students because I agree. The students, no excuse. But the alumni and the people, I don't know. Those fans had a big effect on people. They were really bad.
Well, they were really bad.
And I'm not
trying to knock the impact on the Storms. But you want to know, this isn't the first time it's happened in East Lansing, is all I'm saying. I'm going to Brooklyn for a game this weekend. Michigan State's playing in the Coaches versus Cancer Classic, and I'm going to Brooklyn for a game.
Yeah.
If I can make it to Brooklyn, A student can roll out of bed and walk over from Shaw Hall to the President Center.
You know, it's interesting. I think it's weird. We're seeing this, and I'm just generalizing this, too. I'm not dismissing your point about being a top program. We're seeing this happen, though, a lot more with stadiums. College football experiences this a little bit, and I'm not excusing it. The other thing that I see, too, here is I wonder, and I'm using the Red Wings as an example here, Satchmo, and we see this now with them. With all the success that a team has, and the Red Wings are, you know, inarguably one of the probably the most successful Detroit franchises over the past 20 years, you'd have to say, right? I mean, you know, with all the playoffs.
Absolutely.
We see this at the Joe now. If the Wings are not playing Chicago or some, you know, Pittsburgh or someone like that, and they're playing Carolina or something, the stadium will, quote-unquote, be sold out. But you'll see, like, a ton of empty seats at the Joe. And I'm just wondering if with some fan bases, and I guess Michigan State could be put into that category, if you see this sort of complacency prop up where people go, I don't want to go to the games, just play important. You know what I mean? You get what I'm saying there? The Red Wings fans, I think, have become that way. And the people don't have that hunger. Michigan State basketball has been so good all the time that, yeah, they're going to show up when North Carolina comes to town or Michigan or Indiana. But, you know, the true test is these games last night. And I wonder if complacency is really overtaking this program. We need to go down into the muck as Red Wings fans or Spartan basketball fans to really see what we want when you don't have something you wanted again. You know what I mean?
I think there are a couple of factors here at play. One is the Big Ten Network, in that because every game is on TV now, it's easier to make the decision to just stay at home and watch the game. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. The second thing is StubHub, is people are buying tickets not for the purpose of going to the game, but to sell the tickets for a profit. So they can sell their North Carolina tickets for the price of the entire season package, and they can sell, and then they sell the Michigan tickets, and they've made $150 or $200 on their investment, or $500 on their investment, or whatever it is. So that's the second thing that's having an impact. And I think the third thing that's having an impact is, you're right, is just sort of a general sentiment. It's like, yeah, wake me up for the big games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something that you see at other college basketball programs.
No, you see them at some, but they have like, you know, let's face it here, the University of Michigan, you see that, but they're a very whole hum fan base. I mean, they're like that all the time. They won't show up for these kind of games, but they'll show up when the Spartans play there, you know.
But Michigan isn't the benchmark for us.
No, I mean, it shouldn't be, not at all, not for basketball. I mean, we're trying
basketball.
Kentucky, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
Michigan isn't the benchmark. You're trying to be like Kentucky and Duke
and
North Carolina.
Take away the Fairweather fans. I mean, as a program, we are there. I mean, you know, it's just that little piece of it that shouldn't be going on. But I'm going to say that I think it's a mixture and a factor of all those things, and I think we'll see as time goes on. That keeps happening. Short of the holiday games, which you talked about, are very tough for every school to fill the building for. Let's have this discussion again in mid-December, in a month from now, and see what, provided the students are there, let's see what happens.
Yeah, provided the students are there, let's see what happens. All right, I think that's a good point. We need to wrap this show up. A quick shout-out to the Michigan State men's soccer team. They reached the Big Ten championship game in soccer. They played it against Indiana. They lost 1-0. So kudos to the Big Ten soccer team for reaching the championship game. And an awful, awful, what were you thinking, Big Ten, for allowing this game to be played? Because it was played in the middle of a monsoon with gusty winds. It was just embarrassing. You could not call the product on the field soccer because they would kick the ball 10 yards in the air, and then a wind would make it grab it, and it would be a left turn. It would be head out. The Big Ten should have postponed the game. Anyway, but kudos to Michigan State.
Wait,
what?
Central, two questions there. First of all, soccer, aren't you supposed to keep playing unless there's lightning?
Yes, you are. But you are supposed to keep playing unless there's lightning. But realistically, for a championship game, they should have looked at the weather and said, let's postpone this one day.
Mm.
And disagrees. All would have been well.
DB disagrees. Huh? You play that game unless it's lightning.
Yeah.
I know what you're
saying.
You got to
postpone.
Second thing is, I'm sorry that I haven't followed the Spartan soccer team as closely as this year. Do they have a chance at the NCAA tournament despite losing?
Yes, they do have a chance at an at-large bid. We'll see. Yeah,
okay.
We'll see. Michigan State was one of the better teams. They were the 3 seed, I believe, heading into the Big Ten tournament. And so they, by reaching the championship game, they've got an outside shot for an at-large bid.
Well, that's a good
people
point
didn't
to
know.
Wrap it up, Satchmo. That's a
yeah,
good
people didn't know they were going
to
get a little soccer knowledge here on Sparty Talk. But
hey, we're always open to talking about other Spartan sports on the show. If you tweet at us at Sparty Talk and you want us to talk about the gymnastics team or whatever, we'll do some research and we'll talk about it a little bit.
Absolutely. I think on that note, I think the Michigan State football and basketball team has earned their fight song for the week. What do you think?
Well, I'm surprised that you're going to do it because of our basketball fans. I guess two outweigh one, I suppose.
Yeah, the two outweigh one. Credit to the football team, credit to the basketball teams. Minus points for the fans. But the fans did get the shot clock stuff right. So
there's nothing else, fans. Show up to confuse the other team with the shot clock, even from the cheap seat.
Absolutely. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.